The Human Race is proudly brought to you by Elevate. Support babies' healthy development at every stage.
The Human Race podcast discusses subjects that will be upsetting for some, including infertility, miscarriage, and stillbirth. Support is available. Check the show description for details. This episode also contains some strong language.
Kia ora and welcome to The Human Race, a podcast about those who are in the race of their lives to create a life. My name's Nadine Higgins. I'm a broadcaster, a journalist, and for the past 4 years, I've been trying to make a baby with my husband.
That's me. I'm Dan. And we reckon infertility is lonely enough without making it a dirty little secret. So we wanted to bring you stories from those people that have been through it.
So even if you don't want to talk about it, maybe those stories can give you hope, or at the very least, make you feel a little less alone. This is a collab podcast between Stuff and Wabi Sabi Media. Aaron Soma and Jake Volibert broke ground with a Hindu, Christian, civil, gay wedding. It was awesome. And after tying the knot, buying a house and getting a couple of dogs, something was missing. They wanted to start a family. But it's not that straightforward when neither of you possess a uterus.
So they started exploring their options and found someone willing to be a surrogate and someone willing to be an egg donor. But finding those up for the task was just the beginning of their journey to making a baby. Kia ora, boys. Welcome along.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Hi, guys.
Now, Nadine mentioned your beautiful wedding that we were lucky enough to come along to. So you fall in love, start your life, have this amazing wedding. But there was a time that, Aaron, you used to pash my wife.
There was. I'm so glad we brought this up so the world gets to know.
Yeah, we went to broadcasting school together, so we've been friends for a long time now. But you no longer pash girls.
I no longer pash girls. I used to really like your wife.
Oh, do you not anymore?
In a different way. It's very, very much platonic. But yes, oh no, it was one of those nightclubs in Christchurch many moons ago. And the rest is history.
Yeah, we have been good friends ever since. So
we have been.
Thanks for talking to us today.
Now, I've got a good gaggle of gay friends, and lots of them have different stories about coming out and how their families kind of dealt with that or reacted to that. When did you come out, Aaron and Jake, and how was your family reactions?
Yeah, good question. Everyone has their own journey, and it's really interesting to sit here with both of you, who we've known for a long time, to have a really honest korero and reflect back on what that time's been like, because family and friends have been key to, for us, a successful coming out journey. I came out when I was 25 years old. It was hard. As soon as I did it, which was to a couple of friends, it felt like weights had been lifted off my shoulders, but that didn't mean it was going to be easy. It was, wouldn't call it heartbreak, but I'd call it really, really hard, really emotional for my family and friends. But hey, they've been the biggest, biggest supporters, and they all stand behind us 100%. Well, behind us and in front of us, because they are true allies. They go out fighting for us where they need to.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. And Jake, yours is slightly similar.
Yeah, Aaron and I came out the same year. And my one was at New Year's Eve. And I just remembered that just now while you were talking. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's kind of, I didn't want to be a New Year's resolution or any of that kind of thing. But I kind of thought, you know, new year, new me. And so I came out to my parents on New Year's Eve. By then I'd already met Aaron. So it was still challenging. You know, we had a very silent conversations with my family, but it seemed to be, it's really fantastic now.
And we fit in just like pieces of furniture at the in-laws' house, which is wonderful. But speaking of New Year's resolutions, I generally write myself a little list, and I had this one particular year, I had things like go to the gym more, save more money, eat healthier. And then I had and I just wrote a blank line, which was come out of the closet, because I didn't want anyone to find my list, but I knew exactly what that meant. But I must say, I mean, it sounds really rosy. For myself in particular, it was rock bottom before I could come out.
Mm-hmm.
And then having to kind of build yourself back up. So yeah, it was difficult, but hey, like, it's really lovely to be here with you both and share our experiences and ensure that others can be inspired by it or take something from it that they see fit. So thank you for inviting us.
No, it's great to have you here. And I guess because this is about, you know, having kids or trying to have kids, a lot of the time I've heard from my gay friends that parents sometimes have this disappointment that they think, oh, we're not going to get grandchildren, we're not going to be these amazing grandparents. And it's just not true. It's not like that really, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, my parents, well, my mum in particular said, ah, does that mean I won't get grandkids from you? Whereas Jake's family's a bit different because there were a lot of grandkids, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now Nico is one of 15 kids. So and by the time we came out, there would have been at least half a dozen.
So like, ah, we've got tons.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just wonderful seeing the collection of volubrate nieces and nephews, and then Nico fitting in amongst that.
Yeah, so spoiler alert, you do have Nico, and you're such naturals. He's gorgeous. But if we rewind a little bit, did you always want to become parents? Was it always part of the plan when you got together?
Well, it wasn't front and centre. You know, as you grow up, you sort of assume that that's what will happen is, you know, you get married and you have kids, and that kind of going along, that's the same dream that you had as a kid. And then when you get older, you kind of think, oh, maybe, you know, I'm quite liking this lifestyle at the moment where I'm, you know, it's just me and just me and my husband. I'm quite enjoying it. But you're still thinking long term, like, that's probably what's going to happen. It wasn't a burning desire within me to have kids, but it was I know I'm going to have kids in the future. I kind of just didn't really know how to, and knowing that it would be quite a big step to get there.
So at what point do you start thinking about the how?
Yeah, I mean, good question. And I think, like, it's really important because the lens we bring to it's a bit different. Being a same-sex couple and going through what we just talked about, the coming out journey. So there are many rock bottoms. There are many ways to have to build your own kinds of resilience to get through that. And as Jake pointed out, you know, when you're younger, you go, oh, well, I want a white picket fence, a house, and a couple of kids, just like everybody else, and that's going to be easy. Well, for us, it wasn't. So our benchmark or the mindset was, well, we can't do that on our own. We know at an early age that it's going to be a bit more difficult, and that's the fertility journey for us. So we actually we travelled a bit. We went to live in Japan for 1 year, and we saw you guys over there too. Had a very good night out, didn't we, Dan?
Another large evening.
A bit of karaoke, lots of sake.
Yeah. I think Dan's katsu curry ended up on the floor, didn't it, Dan?
The floor, the bathroom, you know, yeah. A few various places.
And then we did 4 years in London. When we came back from London, we got married, and then we bought a house, and the house just felt that little bit empty. We had a couple of spare bedrooms. That comes from a world of privilege, and we know that, and we need to be honest about that. But yeah, we thought, well, there is that little something missing in our lives. We started figuring out which ways we could have children. So we went to a foster evening session, like an info night. Okay. To figure out whether we might be eligible to be foster parents. We looked at, routes of adoption. So we're doing a lot of research around that. And then surrogacy was one option. But as you say, it becomes this kind of deep, dark secret people don't really talk about. But what you will find and what we found is a lot of it's about networking. So there are Facebook groups, IVF and surrogacy groups, for example, that we joined. And we were often just bystanders watching conversations happening and reading posts to gather as much information as we could. But it was around that time that a wonderful friend of ours talked about wanting to be a surrogate, and we talked about looking for a surrogate, and that's how it all came to be.
And so with this friend of yours coming forward and offering to be a surrogate, had you guys sort of broached everything or told your families that this was the route you were going to go down, or did you kind of secure the surrogate and then have that discussion?
I think by then we'd definitely found our surrogate, and then we talked to our family. Well, we talked to my family about foster children, because my parents have foster children at the moment.
That's right.
And so, you know, we'd obviously known how that journey had gone for them, and that's why one of fostering was one option as well. And so I suppose by then Mum and Dad had already figured out, you know, all the family had known that we were interested in having our own family of some kind.
So you have your surrogate, the beautiful Lacey. Where do you go to find the egg?
Our friend Lacey was wonderful, and we got on that journey with her, doing tests at the fertility clinic, starting counselling because we needed to go through an ethics process for surrogacy. And then Lacey had said to us she didn't necessarily want to provide the egg because that would have been really hard for her come time of birth.
Absolutely.
To kind of give away that connection. And we totally get that. That is a really important thing to say from the outset and be honest and open about that. And we felt the same way too. What would that mean for Lacey emotionally? So we then kind of sought trying to find someone who might donate an egg. And there's two beautiful friends of ours, Alice and Dee. They're in the same sex female relationship. Beautiful friends of ours. And we kind of cold called them, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, it was really difficult. We sent a Facebook message. It's the kind of conversation we would have had in person because we're those people, but we didn't want to catch them by surprise in person. So we wrote a really kind of detailed message about what we were doing and how. And
Oh, you must have agonized over that.
It was really painful to send. It was actually Lacey's husband who said, send that bloody message. If you don't get, you don't.
Do it,
if you don't ask, you don't get. And so we ripped off the Band-Aid. Alice, who I sent it to, who I've known for a long, long time, was amazing. She's like, well, first of all, thank you so much. We're humbled that you could think of us and give us a little bit of time, a couple of days. We'll have a chat and we'll work it out. And they came back to us and said, we'd love to. So that was wonderful. Lacey's family and Alice and Dee, they are now part of our village. They're our extended whānau. Nico sees them. We call them aunties for Nico because it's really important for him that he knows what this journey is. And I just want to go back to your earlier point, Nadine. For us, going through fostering or the consideration of fostering and adoption and then ending up at surrogacy, for us as a same-sex male couple, knowing we can't do it on our own, it was actually about having a family no matter how that family was made up. So our benchmark wasn't we have the right body parts, we can make a baby. It was like there's going to be genetics from elsewhere already. There's going to be this dynamic where we can't do it on our own. So it kind of set us up for what our expectations should be along the way. So from the outset we knew we needed help. And that, I think, helped to build a little bit of resilience in for us. So, yeah.
It's worth pointing out at this point, for people who think that surrogacy is like the Kardashians where you just, like, go pay someone to bake your baby, it's really not like that in New Zealand. So can you give us an idea of the process you had to go to even get to the point where your embryo goes into Lacey?
Yeah, so we had to we went through a fertility clinic, and the reason for that is you can do surrogacy the turkey-based way.
Yeah.
Or the at-home method.
But I guess that means the surrogate has to be the genetic parent, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we went through a fertility clinic. As part of that, you have to go through an ethics process. So there's an ethics committee that signs off the surrogacy. Now, a lot of people do not like that, and it is very clunky, and there's a lot of time involved, and it's expensive too. You go through counselling, joint counselling, medical tests, seek legal advice. I personally liked the process because it gives you enough time, I felt, to think. It gives everyone, it gave us all the chance to answer the really tough questions, have the really hard conversations. So you know that when you come to 9 months later, that things are going to be a bit smoother than they otherwise would have been had you not had those conversations.
Yeah. I mean, hearing that list, it sounds so daunting and confronting. Jake, you go through some counselling, obviously, together and then separately. Was it helpful? And like, what kind of questions do they ask you or get you to come forward with?
Yeah, I find the counselling was really, really good, and we got a lot out of it. Our counsellor spoke about the process quite a lot, and she asked us some very challenging questions. So one of them I remember was what happens if we break up during the process? And it was certainly the one thing we never thought about. And so we had to kind of on the spot answer the questions.
Promise we won't break up.
Yeah. So it's really those kind of questions were really, really difficult. And I think another one was that what happens if Lacey passes away during the process? And like, Jesus.
Oh, that's heavy.
And so, you've got these things that clearly the percentage of that is very, very low, that happening, but the risk is there still. So how do you mitigate against that risk? And I can't remember what our answer was either then, but it's challenging questions that you got to think about, because they have long legal ramifications if you don't.
Yeah. Maybe one of the less fun parts is that you actually have to be vetted by social services, right, that you are fit and proper parents. What's that like? Because from the outset, it sort of feels a little bit insulting. Other people can just have a baby no matter what kind of person they are.
Yeah, and I mean, I think when you're going through the process and you're doing all these things, it starts to become a little bit tick box. And I get the feeling authorities feel the same way, because that's what the law says, the current law says. And so we kind of just went with it. Because you've got to do whatever it bloody takes to get that bubba in your arm. So you will do anything. And if that's one part of it, that's one part of it. You just got to go with the flow. I think we had to do police checks, Going through it, I was kind of fine. I was like, it is what it is. We had a wonderful, wonderful social worker who came to visit us twice. We were quite nervous. We were reading again on these fertility Facebook groups about people posting about the social worker coming over and what that was like.
And so, they come to your house?
They came to our house, yeah. We actually, because we had a beautiful bar cart, which we loved. It had whiskies and things, and we don't have it anymore because we got a child. It would get ruined. We literally went and took all the booze away and put it away, because we were like, what are they going to be looking for? It wasn't like that at all. Look, our social worker came, sat down on the couch, we cooked some kai, had a cup of tea and just chatted, and it was lovely. So we did that twice, and our social worker, if she's listening, shout out, you're amazing. One thing that it was very clear to me from the way she approached us was that this was all about the bubba. It was all about future Nico. And she was having to write a court report, because that then goes in front of a judge. But she wrote it from the perspective of Nico reading that when he was, 16 or 18 years old. So he could look back and see what his journey is, see the role of the state, but see the role of everyone that had a little part in it. And that was kind of wonderful. Of jumping forward a little bit and the importance of that court report, we had to adopt Nico from Lacey and her husband. And I think that was the moment, I think when we were walking into the courtroom, the family court, and look, it's a family court situation that was really happy for us. It was a really amazing milestone. And we had a lovely family day, celebrating that. It was that was the one moment where I was like, why am I at a courthouse for a bubba that I have in my arms, and we are decent, decent parents, and we're having to go and claim him? Now, look, I know it's part of the law, and there's appetite for the law to change, and progress has been made, but I think that was my one moment where I was like, why am I doing this? Why is the state involved in my life? But it is what it is, and I know there'll be positive change for families going forward eventually.
Yeah, and hopefully that is going to be the thing, because, for me, I'm just like, seems fucked. That is where it's at when, you are two amazing humans that are giving Nico a beautiful life going forward. I mean, it just blows my mind.
But anyway, we should fast forward a little bit, because you get your ethical approval, you do all your counselling and you tick all your boxes. At what point do you actually start trying and putting the embryo into Lacey?
So for we got approval for ethics in maybe April of 2020. So this was all during lockdown. So this is their first session they had in on via Zoom, and then we had to do some. We did more genetic testing, and we do some egg extraction. So that happened, must have been in June or July.
So that's the IVF process.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then by the time there was viable embryos that had been tested, the first transfer for Lacey was in October of 2020. So that was about 6 months from go to woe.
And Lacey's not in the same. She's not in Wellington with you guys. She's in Northland.
Whangarei, yeah. So Lacey would come down and go to the clinic, but we'd have a lovely time. She'd stay at our house, and it was a really nice, you know, because there was distance between us. We're friends, but it was just nice to be in those moments together, have some face to face time. The first embryo transfer, which Jake said was October of that year, didn't stick. So the embryo, my understanding is the embryo needs to stick to the uterus lining or uterus wall, and that didn't happen. So we went back for another round of embryo transfer in November, I think about four weeks later or something, mm-hmm. and we got pregnant. And it was wonderful.
Oh, yay. That feeling after that process must have been awesome.
That feeling, absolutely. We were on the highest high until it was the lowest low. Oh. So that was about 5 weeks of pregnancy, and then we miscarried. And we miscarried the week of Christmas, and we were gearing up to tell our closest loved ones, our parents, on Christmas Day that we were pregnant. Yeah, really hard. A miscarriage is one of those things that many people don't talk about, but is oh so common. And it's tragic. It's traumatic. I still feel, and even though we have Nico, I still feel trauma from that because I know the emotion that we all went through, in particular Lacey.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to ask you about that because – you know, she was in Northland, you were in Wellington, she's physically going through it, but that's your baby in there. So what was that process like? Does she call you? What happens?
Yeah, so it was one thing I didn't quite know was that kind of miscarriage process was, I think for us, spanned about 4 days, which started as kind of cramping and then bleeding, and then, you know, by the time you're able to have a check and the you know, Lacey's hormone levels are going down at that point. That's when, you know, so it lasted about 4 days and I was working. I was working at the Ministry of Health at the time and the media team there, and I was, you know, helping write the 1 p.m. briefings. And I was effectively then ducking into a room at my workplace to take calls from Lacey because I wanted to talk to her as much as possible. So I'd duck into a room and would chat. And sometimes cry, and then I'd run into the car park and call again, and it was really, really hard, that kind of process. And I know many people have gone through that, so thoughts to all those people. It was hard not being in person, and our greatest concern the whole way through, the greatest concern was not for us, it was for Lacey and what she was doing for us, because she is superhuman. I have no other words. Just amazing. And so we wanted to support her as much as possible. We weren't in the same city, and that was quite difficult.
And she had amazing support from her husband, who can't get enough credit for all the stuff that he helped her with, that when we couldn't. So, yeah, he was able to support her through that as much as he could. And we were doing what we could from the phone.
Yeah, and I know we've talked to Lacey about it since, and she talks about the feeling of guilt. So the guilt of... the feeling of guilt of, you know, everything's been going pretty smooth up until this point. But we've had a miscarriage, and what's my role in this miscarriage? And we're very strong on that. And Lace, I know you'll be listening. You know, it's very much she was at the forefront, and the body is the body, and nature is nature. And we had to kind of use that as our way to get through it. And we're just grateful. At that point, we were just grateful that we'd got to that point along the journey, and you know, whatever will be, will be. That's where we had to put our minds.
Absolutely. And you guys were such a great support to Lacey through that. How did you, did you find that you grieved together, or did you go and isolate yourselves a little bit to try and deal with it yourselves?
Us two were always just grieving together, because we just weren't saying anything. We were just sitting on the couch. The TV would have been off, and we were just sitting there just in silence, just, yeah.
Yeah, it was like someone had passed away. Mm. We would sit in the lounge and just have no words for each other. We just, you know, we were there physically, but it was like we were distant, and we had to get through Christmas Day, which was going to be our kind of our reveal to our parents. And it was just a really sad time, but we didn't tell anybody. And it's I remember thinking back, going, you know, because we're going to tell them on Christmas Day positive news, we don't want to say, hey, and we're also going through this tragic thing right now and upset Christmas Day. So we said nothing, and I'm still glad that we said nothing at that point. But it's that when you want your mum, or you want that close person to you, you just want to tell them everything, but you can't. And so that was tough. We did go for New Year's. We went down to Abel Tasman National Park, and we did about 4 days of camping and walking, and that was wonderful. It was wonderful for us, and for our relationship.
Yeah.
And just to kind of start the year going, you know, it is what it is. We're out in nature. The world is beautiful. Let's push on.
Oh, so you got yourself back in the mindset, I guess, because given how much it was affecting you all, Lacey included, how do you then get yourself in the position to be like, all right, we've got to go again?
Yeah, yes, resilience. It was definitely a challenge. And I think by then we had used the viable embryos that we had tested. So we had some more that we could use. So we had to do it through another round of testing, which took another probably about a month. I think they had got tested in Australia. So that was tough, having to wait another 2 months or so for all that to happen, and then also the shutdown over the Christmas break. We just had to, like, you know, bury our heads and just keep going. Not bury our heads, but you know, head down and keep working away. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, so we came up for our kind of our third attempt, which was March of 2021, and again that was successful. That was wonderful.
But then how do you approach the positive test this time round? It's joyful, but you must also be terrified.
Oh, it's once bitten, twice shy. Mm. Absolutely, Nadi. Like, you don't want to count your chickens before they hatch. So hesitantly. Mm. Yeah, hesitantly. Yeah.
And almost every step moving forward, or every test you take, or every scan that might come, is also that just apprehension, right?
Absolutely, yeah. One of the scans we did in Whangarei that we flew up for, you're just waiting for that moment where they find the heartbeat, and then you're like, yeah, you're breathing in and you're just not saying anything. You're just like, yes, oh, thank God. Then it's that relief, yeah.
So you're on absolute tenterhooks. How long before you feel like, okay, we can actually celebrate this, this might actually happen?
Well, we didn't say anything to our parents or families for a little while because of that, that feeling. There was one Sunday, and I can't quite remember how far through we were. I'm guessing maybe 4 or 5 weeks, and get a call from Lacey in the morning. At this point, we have a great relationship with Lacey, and we were talking every day, whether it was via messenger or video call. Get a call or a message, I think it was one Sunday morning. And at this point, we're kind of feeling upbeat. And Lacey had started having a bleeding again. And first and foremost, it was about us wrapping the support around Lacey. We put our feelings aside for those moments. And most importantly, it was Lacey that we needed to support. So Lacey went to the hospital, and we were in touch with her. And I remember we had plans for that day down in Wellington with friends, cancelled those plans, and then we just sat in the lounge, the two of us, once again, waiting. Mm-hmm. Lacey was in at the hospital in Whangarei. Staff were incredible. And we jumped on a video call with her when the doctor came in. And we just sat there waiting. I remember it was about 20, 30 seconds, but it felt like forever. And we finally heard the heartbeat again. It was a real roller coaster. I know it's cliche, but it was a real roller coaster.
Yeah.
But look, our friendship with Lacey meant that we could all be strong together. Mm. We could all be really sad together at the same time. And that was really important, to be on the journey with each other, which has been beautiful.
Yeah.
And we can say now that third try was our Nico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was strong and resilient right from the outset.
Mm. So it sounds like you guys have got such a great relationship with Lacey. Because you're in two different parts of the country and you're going through this pregnancy and you're kind of wanting to know what's happening, like how do you know how many calls are too many, how many FaceTimes are too less? Like how do you balance that off?
Oh, well, I'm Lacey and I just love talking. So we were going at it left, right and centre. Yeah. We were sending each other articles and things to read and
happy gifts and everything.
Yeah. And so her and I, you know, it was a friendship and it was an exciting time, you know, apart from those, it was an exciting time. So,
yeah.
So we were, I think we kind of just took it as it came and
yeah,
it was fine. Yeah.
Some people think when they start trying for a baby, bam, they'll fall pregnant. But for others, it can take years. They give everything a shot. Surgery, tests, drugs, specialists. Switching up lifestyle choices can help, and this goes for guys too. The journey sperm undertake on their way to fertilize an egg has been likened to a human trying to swim thousands of kilometers. So it's obvious why it's essential to create a healthy environment for sperm production. Menovit is a male fertility supplement specifically formulated to support sperm health and motility. Made with a unique mix of antioxidants, it provides support during the conception journey along with a healthy lifestyle. Menovit is available at leading pharmacies. For more information, head to elevate.co.nz.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Lacey was due November 2021, which from memory, you know, Auckland was still in lockdown. Northland might have been in maybe level 3 at that time. So how did you navigate that?
Yeah, I think Auckland had gone into some kind of lockdown earlier. So we had the national lockdown and then Auckland was still in it. And then there was risk that Northland was going to go back into lockdown or something again. So it must have been a Thursday and we just like went and booked flights. We're like, we're doing this. We're coming up here. It's 6 weeks before the due date. We can't stay here and get risk of getting stuck or isolated. So yeah, we flew up and we had to have signed documentation from our social worker to get through Auckland because of the border.
to allow us to travel.
And there wasn't a direct flight between Wellington and Whangarei, so we had to change in Auckland and everyone was masked up to the wazoo. It was just, yeah, such a stressful time.
Well, I remember that day because I think Lacey messaged that morning and said, look, it looks like we're going to go down into lockdown again. And we were kind of working from home from Wellington and we're like, oh, yes, great, but we have all these things we need to do before the baby comes to get a house ready and, oh, gosh.
who's going to look after the dogs? Yeah, and everything?
All this stuff. And then I was like, okay. So I called my mum and go, mum, what should we do? She goes, why the hell are you calling me? get on a bloody flight. Go be there right now. Everything else in Wellington will be sorted. We'll take care of it. You go. You guys need to be together.
Oh, go,
we'll support
Mum.
You from afar. But one of the most amazing things is that day, Lacey, because we had a accommodation booked, but not that far out in advance in Whangarei. So Lacey sorted us accommodation. We went and stayed with Lacey's mother-in-law. Rose, if you're listening, we love you. Thank you for allowing us to be your gay flatmates. So we went and stayed with Rose for about 4 weeks. Lacey's mother was also there staying with them to help look after their kids. So Lacey's mum was getting out soft toys and teaching us how to put the soft toy in water and bathe a baby. Like,
oh,
this was a real village.
Yeah.
Everyone was really excited. And the blessing in disguise lockdown for us or that situation was we got to spend a lot more time with Lacey and her family, the wider family, than we would have otherwise. So we have a really strong connection to them. And we go up there, we will stay with Rose again. You know, like that's our home away from home.
So tell us about the delivery suite and when Lacey's in labour. Because my fear when you said you were in lockdown is you weren't going to be allowed to be there, but you were. What was
yeah,
that like?
Lacey's midwife had talked to the hospital and organised it. So it was normally it's just one other person, usually the husband, in the delivery suite, but she was able to get it so that both of us could be there, and that was really special and really amazing. So in the delivery suite was Lacey, her midwife, and us two, and that was it. And it was so beautiful, and that we must have gone into the hospital at about 11 o'clock, and then we were just waiting in the room and just walking around and playing music and having this kind of just nice relaxing atmosphere. And yeah, it was just really special as well, just knowing that within a few hours, you know, we were going to have a boy or girl, and yeah, hoping it was all going to go well as well. We were just nervous, obviously, about what I've never been in a delivery suite before.
Well, you had to see a vagina for the first time.
I'm still traumatized.
Well, it's probably not a vagina in all its glory, to be fair.
I definitely wasn't looking.
You're like, it's all happening down there, all good, all good.
Yeah. she was in the water. I was like, oh, it's fine. Yeah, and then I wasn't really looking down there until there's a head there. I was like,
yeah. Yeah, I remember it starting out very jovial. We had a playlist, and there was probably lots of Ed Sheeran and cool, you know, Sam Smith and stuff. And then it just got a bit quieter, and Lacey's body was gearing up for baby to come, and it was just magical. She was phenomenal. We videoed it. We captured that on video in a modest way, but just seeing Lacey's face, and I remember really clearly, and then we caught this on video, where Lacey is kind of panting and going through it, and it's probably a couple of minutes before baby comes out. She turns to Jake and I, who are right beside her, and she says, "You're going to be dads."
Oh, my. Because this woman is, like, super human.
So how could you even think about that?
Well,
she's just about to be screaming her head off. Yeah.
So, you know, right till the bitter end, that was her goal.
Mm.
Yeah.
She wanted to see our faces when she got to hand Bubba over to us.
Oh, I've never met Lacey, but I love her already.
just getting tears in my eyes already. Thinking about it. Yeah.
So Lacey hands you your new baby. Like, what? Tell us about that. What that felt like.
I was so terrified. Like, I'd never held a brand new baby that small before, let alone one that was like just come out of the water and the womb, and I was shaking like a leaf. And then the midwife helped, and she gave, and then I cuddled him, and he was just most beautiful thing in the world. Yeah, happiest day of our lives.
I had a job.
It's very purple. He's not meant to be this colour.
I had a job of just ensuring that we told Lacey's mum and Lacey's husband that Lacey was safe, that we were all safe, Bubba was safe. And so I just was going to send a text message, but I thought, oh, well, here, I'll just send a quick photo. So it was a photo of Lacey holding Nico. Yes.
This would have been a few minutes after the actual birth.
So he's purple, mucousy and gross. So I'll go and send the photo. By accident, I sent it to our dog groomer. So the first person to know that Nico's been born was our dog groomer, who doesn't even know that we're having a baby via surrogacy. Because I think because that morning, the morning we knew we were going to go into the hospital, I was trying to sort stuff out. She was at the top of my text list. So
yeah. How long did it take you to realize you hadn't sent it to the
right? Straight away. And I screamed out and then I texted her and said, ah, by the way, Snow and Minnie have a new sibling. Sorry, wrong person.
So you send those texts off. And then is there like a sort of moment where it's just the three of you almost and you realise your dad's?
Yeah, I think it, by the time – so we'd stayed at the delivery suite for another couple of hours and then moved to the resting ward area. And I think Aaron might have – Aaron had taken drove Lacey home and it was just me and Nico there and I was in tears, just so happy. It was just like, wow, you know, this is going to be life now. He's going to change my life for the rest – yeah. It was incredible.
So overwhelming.
Yeah, and knowing because I was gonna do the parental leave care for the next 7 months, like feeling daunted and overwhelmed by just what's going to happen. You know, I don't think I've only changed maybe one nappy before he was born. So we did practice, and I'm like, it's definitely not the same as that is when you practice. overwhelmed, but then yeah, just so much joy and. Yeah, and I was playing music to him, and yeah, I think it was Bruce Springsteen.
I mean, I think up at that moment, I think we'd been so focused on the pregnancy and that once bitten, twice shy, and what could or could not happen. I don't think I'd actually really considered what it was like to actually have a baby, let alone all the things you need to do to keep that baby healthy and safe. So, for example, we had to wait in the car outside the hospital because of the lockdown. We had to wait in the car car outside the hospital until Lacey went into active labour. So once she was in active labour, we were allowed to go in. But I remember sitting there and I said, Jake, we don't know how to make formula. Should we like be Googling this right now? So it was even the bare basics that we didn't quite know about. And we didn't Google with hospital staff are wonderful. They'll help us.
So what's he going to call you?
So well, I'm
because he's not quite talking yet. So what have you been calling yourselves? I suppose.
I'm Dada. I'm Dad. And Aaron's Papa. And he's almost got the P right when he's, but he also calls everything Mama. So it doesn't matter what kids are saying. So.
Yeah. But what's really, really important for us, and this comes back to the genetic debate, is that, so we used my sperm, to create Nico, and that was because, our egg donor D is, European Pākehā. And so, we were able to have a mixed race baby, you know, half Pākehā, half Indian, which is lovely. But it's really important. Jake's family's heritage is Dutch, and it's really important that we instill as many of those kind of things as possible. But there's this whole discussion around ownership of Nico genetically. So I was getting a bit upset through the process where people were asking me and they were doing it because they were just interested and wanted to be educated, and that's wonderful. But they're asking me, oh, you know, so it's your sperm, so, oh, will you, you know, how does Jake feel about that and things like that? And as I said earlier on, for us it was never about, the genetics. It was just about having a family. It was about having a child. And we know there are so many children out there who need happy, healthy homes and loving parents.
Yeah.
So for us, that was the goal, not about who had ownership of Nico genetically. So it's been really important for me in particular to make sure Nico knows that his heritage, his whakapapa, hails back to India and back to the Netherlands, and we're going to continue to make sure of that in whatever ways we can.
Yeah. Man, it's such a long journey. It feels like it's been such a long journey at this point. And then you get to you guys sort of taking Nico home. How do you thank somebody? Like, how do you even find the words or the way to thank somebody for growing, baking a baby for you? You know, especially since you can't pay for it in this country.
Yeah, we did our very best to find the words all the time. You know, it's been really important for us to be on the journey with Lacey. It's much about a surrogacy journey as is about a journey of two men becoming dads. That's been 100%, you know, part of our co-papa. And so, look, it was a lot of that. It was a lot of staying connected. It was a lot of ensuring. We were quite public. We actually didn't really want to tell our story initially, but we were quite public on social media and then did a couple of articles and things like that because we thought if we can help to inspire others, then we should.
So in a way of paying it forward, you know, because we couldn't pay Lacey, so we could do some more community service in a way that we can share our experience and help other people in the future.
And Lacey's been exactly the same as well. You know, she's been doing media interviews and things like that because she knows there are others out there who need to hear from her experience.
Yeah, you guys are lighting the way for other people, and bless you for doing that.
Oh, it's our privilege and our honour. We feel honoured to come and talk to you about this if it can help anyone in any kind of way. So I guess, Dan, to your question, that's been the way that we've been able to do a little something. But it will never be enough. It feels like it will never, ever be enough. But if we can continue to send photos to Lacey and remind her of the massive role she played and our friends Alice and Dee as well, remind them and what they've done for us.
And, yeah, teaching Nico from as early as he can understand and learn, he wants to know where he comes from, and he's got an amazing story that we can share with him.
And what a lucky little bubba he is because he's got so many people who love him.
I mean, that is it. And we recorded videos of ourselves. We recorded videos the morning before Nico was born. Aww. We recorded a little video when we were in the birthing suite together and then also once when he was born. We're going to edit those together with photos and things so Nico can learn about his journey. So we're talking to him like kind of before, during and after birth. A friend of ours suggested that, and we were really reluctant and also just didn't find the time. But I'm so glad we did because it will go to show, well, for Nico anyway, that there was a real village.
And how very, very wanted he was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So how long after that is it that you actually get to go to the court and sign the papers and he is officially in the eyes of the law?
Well, on the day Lacey contacts the social worker, effectively straight after birth, to say, this is baby. Baby was born at this date, on this date, at this place, and my wish is for baby to go to Aaron and Jake.
So she has to give permission for that to happen.
That's right, yeah. And that becomes, I believe, an interim order for us to have baby in our care at the hospital. And so a really important part of the process. So we did that.
Yeah, and then so Nico was born in November, and then we had to do another interview with our social worker, and that's when she talked about the full report that she would write to for the courts, in the words that Nico can understand when he rose to read it. So that must have been in about March, and then we met with our lawyer a few times and signed some more documents, and then our court hearing must have been in about June or July. Of 2022, so he would have been about seven, 8 months from birth. Yeah,
it's such a long journey, and as soon as you mention lawyers, all I see is dollar signs.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have an idea of what this whole process has cost you?
Our lawyer was an amazing, amazing friend of ours, Anisha, and she was actually our wedding celebrant. And so having another member of our family and friends to help support us through this journey was amazing. She helped us a lot through the process, and she offered to do it for us for free, and we said no, we can't. You know, while I appreciate the amazing offer, but it's a lot of your time that you spend on this.
I think probably all up, we did a few sums, and we think it might have totaled around $70,000 or $80,000. Now, look, I think it's a really important thing to state now. That is, you know, we had the means to do that, and we are so, so lucky that we have that. And many families won't.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart. I know my mum's particularly devastated. She said to me, but Aaron, that means so many others won't be able to have kids because there'll be a financial barrier. You know, those, you know, socioeconomically struggling will not be able to. And it is heartbreaking to hear that. So we come from a place of privilege. We've got a warm, healthy home and loving support around us. Many others won't. And that's really, really sad for us, particularly being part of the rainbow community and knowing that we struggle in different ways to others. And we're not as accepted by friends, family, society. So that's an added complexity, and I think it's really important for us to acknowledge that.
Yeah. On your journey, did you guys have any negative responses or face any stigma at all throughout the pregnancy?
I can't remember.
I know Lacey did. I can't remember who it was. I feel like it was someone she interacted with along the way that was someone she didn't know, and she was kind of explaining that she's pregnant and it's not going to, you know, it's not for her, her and her family. And this person said something like, you know, that's not what nature has made us. That's not nature's role or something like that. And that was really hard. I think that might have been the only kind of piece of kind of criticism. So, we kind of talked about that, tried to laugh it off. But it was sad to hear that, absolutely.
So how Nico's just over one now, isn't he? How did you survive the first year? How are you enjoying being dads?
Yeah, it's so much fun. He is just he's such a great little character. He just has so much life and energy and wants to crawl on anything and climb onto everything and loves climbing up the stairs, pulling all the dirt out of the pot plants and eating it.
What do Minnie and Snow, your dogs, make of him?
To start with, they were very apprehensive, but we've got a video on our phone from last week is when we were driving in the car and he's in his car seat and she jumps up onto him and he's just giggling away and holding her and like just stroking her nicely, which is something he never does. Normally he just goes to grab and pull the tail, but he was just in fits of laughter.
He has tried dog food. He does whatever he can to get into the dog bowls. So
thankfully it's the crackers, not the raw meat.
Okay, this is The Human Race, and we've reached the finish line. We end the show by asking all our guests the same four questions to find out what they've learned along the way.
Question one, and I love this one because I've got a lot of answers for it. People love to try and be helpful when you're struggling to conceive. And maybe if they've managed to conceive themselves, they consider themselves experts. So I'm kind of keen to know, what is the worst thing that someone said to you during the fertility process or the most unhelpful piece of advice?
The one that sticks out for me was a medical professional who said at the very start of the journey, don't worry guys, this is going to be a success story. And it's not what I wanted to hear. And I found it quite upsetting because when you're in game mode and it's really emotional, you know that it's not going to be successful for a long, long time and success may never come. Mm. And so I found that really hard to take. I thought it was inappropriate, I suppose.
Throwing a lot of false hope out there early in the piece.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. It really played with the brain. So it's, I suppose it's not advice, but it was a statement and set a bit off for me, I suppose.
What would you say to someone else who was at the start of this journey? Because as you say, you've tried to pay it forward, you're kind of blazing a trail here. What advice would you give to another couple at the beginning of this journey?
Yeah, look, I would say wrap as much support around you as you can with the right people, because there will be the wrong people, the people that won't understand your situation. Family and friends rely on them, and I think also try to get comfortable with having feelings. Let those feelings rear their ugly head when they need to. Sometimes you might just need to cry, and that's okay.
I guess we kind of spoke about it earlier, but it's such a roller coaster, and lots of it can be sad and some of it can be awkward, but there are funny parts that come along. Is there any like hilarious moments for you guys that sort of stand out?
Well, definitely the text message to our to our dog groomer.
I remember going at the fertility clinic to go and do my sample, and I think it was during a lunch break at work, and I went up and I had a meeting afterwards, so I went up with my little cup prior to, and I said to the embryologist, I was doing the form, said to the embryologist, "Oh, how long is this going to take?" And then she said to me, "Aaron, well, that's up to you. It will take as long as you allow it to take."
I guess just finally, what would you say to someone who is supporting someone like you going through the process? Because I find sometimes people don't know how to best support you. They want to, but they don't know how.
Just offer your love and say, I'm a shoulder to cry on. You can ask me any questions. You can ask for advice from me, or what I did in this experience, or in this situation. I feel like my life's an open book now because we've shared our story enough, so that if anyone needs to ask any more questions, you're welcome to, and I can. And it was great. The more people we talk to, even in our antenatal group, about who else went on fertility journeys, and surprisingly, a lot of them, a lot of people are having children later than, when our parents were having children. They were in their early 20s, and we're in our late 40s, late 30s now.
Well,
I'm turning 40 next week, so that's the number in my mind. So people, there are a lot more people, but people don't really talk about it enough. And I think, it's because it's such a difficult subject, and it's great that you guys are able to lift the lid a bit more on the story.
Yeah, absolutely. My piece of advice would be sometimes the best thing to say is to say nothing. And what I mean is, silence can be really comforting. I had a friend of mine who was going through a fertility journey and had miscarried, and I just could pick up that something wasn't right, and I didn't know the full extent of it, and I didn't need to ask questions. So I picked her up forcefully. I said, "Hey, I'm coming to get you." Picked her up. I went and got some takeaways, went back to my house, and we just sat there, and we just sat in silence. But I could pick up that something was wrong, and I don't think she was ready to talk at that point, but that wasn't important. It wasn't important for me to hear what she had to say. It was important that she knew she had someone to say it to when she was ready, and that I was there on the couch. Mm. So it was takeaways and
just a bit of company.
Yeah, absolutely.
That resonates with me because I'm a fixer, so I always try and fix issues for Nadine. Yeah. And she's sometimes like, just listen, don't need anything, just be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I think you're right. What you said before, Jake, we don't talk about it enough. There's actually a whole heap of people out there going through it, but totally, they're all kind of going through it on their own. Mm. So thanks for making it a little bit more normal to talk about it and for joining us on the human race.
Oh, thank you. We want to say thank you to you. One thing I've been noticing, is that people don't often talk about the fertility journey when they're going through it. We were really similar. We didn't want to say too much when we were going through it, but all you often hear is the success stories or the happy stories, and I guess we can lay claim to that with Nico. We want to say thank you to the both of you because we've known you for a long time, and that started with a pash. but we want to say thank you to you for being vulnerable and sharing your journey as you're going through it. It's remarkable. Not many people would, but you're putting yourselves out there, and that's going to be so beneficial for so many people. So we're privileged to be your friends. Thank you both. We love you
thanks.
So much.
We love you too.
Thank you.
Right, cut before I cry.
You've been listening to The Human Race, a podcast from Wabi Sabi Media and Stuff.
Follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or any other podcast app.
And please leave a review. It helps other people discover this important content.
You can also listen at stuff.co.nz/thehumanrace.
We'd also love to hear from you. Email thehumanrace@stuff.co.nz and follow us at facebook.com/thehumanracenz or on Insta @thehumanracenz.
The Human Race was produced by me, Dan Higgins.
And me, Nadine Higgins.
Audio editing and mixing by John Ropeha.
The associate producer was Jen Black.
And executive producer was Chris Reed.
Thanks very much for listening.
That was The Human Race, which was proudly brought to you by Elevate. Support babies' healthy development at every stage.
Always read the label, follow the directions for use. Vitamin and mineral supplements are not a substitute for a balanced diet. If you have a baby with a neurotube defect or spina bifida, seek specific medical advice. Bayer New Zealand Limited, Auckland.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.